for inviting me. And I want to apologize for missing what I hear were a lot of really good talks. Okay, now I took the... We were told that if we were going to ask for 45 minutes, we should give a survey. And so I'm really going to give a survey. Most of it is non-rigorous because there's not very much work on this. Ours is rigorous work. But I think what it shows is that there are lots of open problems, actually. Okay, and so the work that I will ultimately talk about here is joint work with Bela, who, as usual, was supposed to be here, like he's supposed to be every place and doesn't show up. And now that's going to be taped so he can hear me say that. And Christian, who is here, and Oliver, who was not supposed to be here. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm just first going to tell you what these are, graphs, what some people say they are in terms of graphs. I'll also mention some reference graphs, which are not like the internet and the World Wide Web, but they're graphs that people know a little better. Then I'll spend a long time telling you about what people have seen in the web, and so what properties the models should have, what the observed properties are. I'll tell you about previous models. So some of them are static models. Some of them are growth models, and there's been a lot of non-rigorous work and some math work on growth models. And then our model is a scale-free graph, and it should model the web better than previous models because it is actually a directed scale-free graph. I'll tell you what the model is, what our results are. I'll give you like one or two pages on strategy of the proof, but I won't go into it in any detail. And then I'll mention some work in progress and some open problems. I think it's kind of nice because now there's a reason to look at a whole new class of very, very nice models, which are inspired by the web. Okay, so... should be pretty obvious that for the internet, we want an undirected graph. And the nodes of this graph are going to be whole systems like AOL or MSN or AT&T. And we have hyperlinks, so we actually want some kind of a directed graph. And the vertices of that graph are web pages, although in certain cases, people will look at an undirected version of the web. Okay, they'll measure properties saying, well, what if I could go in either direction on the web? Okay, so some graphs which are reference graphs, for contrast, this is not how the web acts, or of course, the first one is the random graph, which I'm sure most of you know. So the random graph, P has n vertices, the probability that any two vertices are connected to each other is P, which one usually takes to scale like something over N. C is less than 1. If the C up here is less than 1, then we just have small clusters of order log N. If C is bigger than 1, we have a giant component. And then we actually get one component. And the reason that I put this in quotes is there are various definitions of what this should be. If it's a disconnected graph and you ask, you know, how long does it take to get from one part to another, then it's infinite. So with a reasonable definition, this should scale log n over log c. C is log n. This should be scaled log n. Watts and Strogatz came up with a different kind of graph that goes from a finite dimensional graph to a random graph as you change a parameter in their graph. And three parameters, N, P, and C, what I have is I have N vertices, and I connect each vertex to its C nearest neighbors, although I could take C to scale with N, as I could up here. And then what I'm going to do, so, you know, let's say that I've got in which each site is connected to its C nearest neighbors, just on a circle. Then I'm going to randomly rewire a given edge. Okay? And so I'll tend to get this number of long-range edges. And as P goes from 0 to 1, from this ordered graph to the random graph. And the diameter of this looks like the diameter of the random graph. At least that's what non-rigorous people say. That's actually something that I think has not been proved rigorously yet. I think that Bela and Oliver may be working on that, but I'm not sure. Okay, so what are the, and as I mentioned, those two graphs are for comparison purposes. The web does not seem to act like that. Okay, so what are the observed properties?
Isn't there this paper of Bela and somebody which appeared sort of half a year afterwards in Strogas where they did make some of the prediction of what's in Strogas rigorous?
I think so. I'm not sure if they're still working on certain aspects of it. They might have gotten the diameter, though.
It appeared 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Maybe. This is actually a new area for me, so I don't know the history of it so well. So if one of you knows the history better than I do, just please tell me. Okay, so the first property is that there's a small diameter, and this is called the small world phenomenon. And so, as I mentioned, there are various definitions that one could use. The most standard definition is just to take the maximum overall pairs of the length of the shortest path in between those pairs, which is fine, except if it happens that you have a disconnected graph, okay? Okay, so the new definitions people are using in actual measurements and in theorems on some of the newer models is you can look at an average distance in which you average over all pairs. Still, you have a problem if you have a disconnected graph. The measurements in the web a couple of years ago actually showed that only 24%. It was only possible to get from one page to roughly 24% of the other pages on the web, but you could still average over the different components. Okay, and then they found that the distances were pretty small, 19 or 16. Okay, so even though the web is huge, one of the things that you want to model is that it has a small diameter. Now, when you look at the random graph or the Watson-Strogatz graph, you see that, you know, it's not hard when you have some kind of a random graph to get a small diameter. Okay, one of the other properties that people have seen, and which is not modeled well by any of the current models people are looking at, is a clustering property. So if I have an undirected graph, people haven't talked about this for a directed graph, and I look at a vertex, then I can look at the number of edges in the neighborhood of that vertex relative to the total possible number of edges if this were in a clique. Okay, and that's the clustering coefficient of that. And you average clustering coefficient of a graph. Okay, so if this were a clique, then the clustering coefficient of that vertex would be 1, but less. Random graph, this is of order 1 over n. The Watson-Strogatz graph, it's of order 1. And measurements, if we're to believe them, of the World Wide Web as an undirected graph, show that it seems to be of be substantial, actually, about a tenth. And most of the models that people look at so far don't have good clustering. Okay.
It just means lots of triangles.
It means lots of triangles, right? It means small, dense subgraphs. Okay, and so people have been looking at the long-range, and what you want to do if you want a reasonable model of the web is to take one of the models that people have been looking at, and in some reasonable way to put in a lot of small dense subgraphs. Okay, so it shouldn't be hard. I'm just mentioning that it's not in most of the models that people have looked at. Okay, another property is an aging property, a growth property. On both the AS Internet and the World Wide Web, people observe that an old vertex is more highly connected than a new vertex. So if I see a vertex like that, it's probably new. It may just be old and really boring, though. Okay, and that's what this comment means. It's not the case that you're just as likely on the web to link to any page as to any other page. Okay, and that's and so people are talking about putting in a fitness parameter, and in our paper we actually have outlined a model with a fitness parameter, but we haven't gone through all of it. You know, the classic example is that Google was a later website, but it was more fit than any of the previous search engines, so it's more highly connected, and it's easy to put in a fitness parameter. Okay, so the thing that people have been focusing on, and really the most interesting aspect of these web graphs and internet graphs, is that if I look, they're called scale-free graphs. They tend to have some very highly connected sites, which are called hubs. And if I look at the probability has K, has a degree K, then at least for K large in the tails, it seems to fall off like a power law. Okay? Whereas the random graph and other graphs that people have studied a lot fall off much faster than that. So this kind of phenomenon has actually been observed for over 100 years now. In economic models, people had seen this in the 1800s. This is often called Zipf's law. Zipf saw this in sociological models. And then starting, in the last few years, there have been just tons of models of the Internet and the World Wide Web which have shown power law degree distributions. Okay, so first for the Internet and then web. So at just about the same time, there was this other paper which fit a much, much larger sample and got the same kind of effect. And then this, I think, is the largest one that's been done. And for the web, you can have different in-degree and out-degree power law, right? The probability that a given web has an in-degree of K can certainly be different than the probability that it has an out-degree of K. And so these are the power laws there. Okay, and one other same people who were measuring these power laws. Yeah. What does it mean here? What you can do, and I'll show you a model that we came up with, and then it's easy to put in a fitness parameter. But basically, if you say that, you know, a new vertex that you bring in is in some way stickier, that there's a higher probability of connecting to that vertex than to some other vertex with other properties being the same, with the same degree distribution and things, then you would say that it was more fit. Okay, so that's actually not a hard factor to put in.
About when you say observation, like, does it mean a simulation?
No, it means actually crawling the web. They did web crawls on 40 million sites. Actually, the 1999 one was 40 million sites, and the 2000 one was much bigger. So they actually, you know, crawl the web. Okay, so they're not. I mean, they're mapping out large parts or significant parts of. Okay, and these guys also talked about the bow tie structure of the webs. You hear that. All that it means is that there's a strongly connected component. Okay, these are sites such that you can get, you know, from any site to any other site. Okay, so that's a strongly connected component. There's an inset, going into the strongly connected component. There's an outset, the set of sites that you reach from some site in the strongly connected component. And then there's stuff that doesn't fit into any of that. So what's this that doesn't fit into any of that? Things that come out of the inset but don't go component, things that go into the outset but don't come from the strongly connected component, and things that avoid the strongly connected component go from the inset to the outset, and then these poor disconnected pieces that, you know, nobody links to them and they don't link to anybody. There's one such strongly connected component, yes. And what these guys measured it, and they said that, and I remember what the measurements are. This may have been like 30% or something, but they were all roughly the same. The strongly connected component, the inset, the outset, and the rest were all about the same size. It didn't look like they were scaling with N in any way. I think the strongly connected component was a little bigger than a quarter, but it was on the order of a quarter of size. Yeah? I'm not sure how they're going to find those. Okay, but the stuff that the inset, you know, that goes out of the inset but not into the strongly connected component, those kinds of things they can find. Okay, and as I said, this is not the stuff that I'm doing, okay, but I just want you to know where these models come from. Okay, so what are the models that people talked about using? The first few, not too seriously. So the random graph does have the small world on small diameter. It has a bad ring coefficient, okay, because, you know, if you pick a particular site on the random graph, the odds that it's going to, you know, have everybody in its neighborhood are pretty small. The percentage of things in it are not so large. I mean, it can have everybody in its neighborhood, but the odds that neighborhood is going to be a clique are very small. Okay, and then what's really bad here is an exponential degree distribution. Watts and Strogatz have good clustering coefficient, good. They also have degree distribution. So obviously, you don't want to look at models like that. Okay. Now, in terms of static models, there was something that was very popular at first, which was that people said, if we want a power law degree distribution, then why don't we just put it in? Okay. Malloy and Reed didn't do this. They, in some other context, were showing how to get a graph with a fixed degree distribution. Newman, Watts, and Strogatz did a non-rigorous paper, and these guys did a rigorous paper in which they used those methods. And what they said is, okay, I want a given degree distribution. So I've got a given number of vertices. If I have a given degree distribution, then I know how many edges I need. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take each vertex and put in as many copies as it's, you know, as it's got to have edges out of it. And then I'm going to do a random matching on those, and that'll give me my graph. And so, of course, they got the right degree distribution because they put it in. They also got some other reasonable properties, but there was no aging on there because it wasn't a growth model, okay? And also, it's not incredibly satisfactory to get a degree distribution, the right degree distribution by putting it in. Okay, so then there were growth models, and so even though this came a little later, I mention it first because it kind of makes more sense to mention this one first. There's a uniform attachment one in which you said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send in a new vertex, and each vertex that I send in will send out edges to two old vertices uniformly at random. Okay? And this is a non-rigorous paper, even though John is on it. my guess is that these guys just probably came and asked him a couple of questions and put his name on it, because I think it could have been a more rigorous paper. Anyway, so what they found is that the average component size, it's kind of interesting from the viewpoint of phase transitions. The average component size changes discontinuously at the transition, but it doesn't blow up. Okay, it's still a zero fraction of what's there. And you should contrast this with a random graph where the average component diverges, and by diverges I mean it becomes a positive fraction of all the sites.
What is the function of? So, what is the transition?
So, well, okay. Actually, not sure what they were talking about by the transition here, because you're right, for a growth model, I mean, you can do it with a fixed M. That's a reason I'm not sure what their transition was, because as you say, GNP is not, I mean, you could view GNP as a process, okay, but then as you say, it has a parameter in it, and so they must have in some way made this look like GNP with a parameter.
I mean, as time changes? No.
No, because as time changes, you don't have a transition. I mean, this is these don't have. They need some kind of a parameter like p. So I'm not sure exactly how they did it. I just skimmed the paper. Okay, but what they noticed was okay. They were happy that they got aging. I mean, it's a growth model. Of course, they got aging, but they got a decaying. Too rapidly a decaying degree distribution. Okay, so finally we get to the models that people have been seriously studying, and these are the preferential attachment models. So first there is an undirected preferential attachment model, and Barabashi and Albert are credited with this, even though if you look back, a guy named Herbert Simon came up with this in 1955 and did it at least as rigorously as these guys, which is not rigorously, but I mean on the same level. So what happens is that you send in a new vertex. So this is my new vertex. So at time t, I've got these four edges. Now I send in a new vertex, and it sends out m, which here I've drawn as two edges, but it doesn't pick the sites uniformly as it did here. It chooses a site proportional to the existing degree of that site. Okay, and their non-rigorous result was that they got a 1 over k cubed. Okay, which they said, oh, well, 3 is pretty close to 2.1 and 2.7, so we're pretty happy with 3. And then they did some simulations, and these are simulations on this model, and they got a log n diameter, and the clustering was falling off much too quickly. Graphs. There. Okay, so that was non-rigorous. Then Bela and Oliver, and in another paper, Bela, Oliver, Spencer, and Tisnani, did an undirected differential attachment model, which was a rigorous version of the Barabashi and Albert model. And in the first paper up there, they found that the diameter of the model for m equals 1, so if I construct a tree, if m equals 1, I just send in one edge each time, so I have a tree, and the diameter here is log n. If m is greater than or equal to 2, the diameter was log n over log n, which was actually a much harder result. And this actually looks like the random graph, right? Because in the random graph, it was log n over log of c, but to get one component in the random graph, c had to be of order log n. And then in this paper, they got a rigorous version of this, meaning that there are upper and lower bounds of this form, okay, of the form for k cubed for the degree. Pardon? Yeah, because it's grown to be connected, right? I mean, you send in, yeah. But if I want to compare it to the random graph, then I should compare it to a high enough density random graph that it's a connected random graph, which means that C should be of order log n, at least. That just means that I send in an edge. I can think of the edge as pointing into or out of the site. I mean, if I wanted to do something on this graph, then...
There's an undirected here and there's an undirected there.
Right, and it's the same thing.
Well.
Right. They're the same model, but this is a rigorous... it's a rigorous version of the Barabasi algorithm. Okay. And ours is going to be like this, but it's going to have a direction in it. Okay, there was an interesting rigorous paper in 2001, which was a uniform attachment with copying model. So here, these guys said is that they send in, that when they're going to send in a new site, what they do is they first uniformly choose one of the old sites and say that that's their prototype site. Okay? And then they're going to want to send in M edges from this new site. And so they flip an alpha-weighted coin. If the coin comes up heads, then you just pick uniformly at random some site and draw an edge to that. If the coin comes up tails, then what you do is you say, okay, this is, you know, my third coin flip. I'm going to pick the third edge coming out of my prototype site and send my edge to the same destination. Okay? So if the thing came up tails every time, then I would send it to exactly the same neighborhood as my prototype vertex had. Otherwise, you know, each time I flip the coin, I might send it to a random site. I might send it to the corresponding site of the prototype neighborhood. Okay, and the out degree is obviously fixed at M here because I always send M. Okay, but the in degree. Okay, so if I actually these things as having a direction when I send them out, then the in degree they found satisfied a non-trivial power law. And so they said, well, this is a semi-directed model. Okay? And it has good clustering properties. So, Well, the motivation for that is, it actually makes some sense. You know, if I am lazy and I don't have a web page and I like your web page, I just go copy it, okay? And I might leave out a few things, you know, because I might not want pictures of your family on my website, but, okay. Or I might. I mean, you never know. They're a nice-looking family. Okay. So, and then Cooper and Fries have a general semi-directed model. The first time the paper appeared, it was an undirected model. Lots of parameters, so I don't want to go through the whole the whole model, but there are lots of things that can happen. It has lots of parameters in it, but they are able to put something in so that they can either look at in degree or out degree, but not both, similar to what happens with the copying model. Okay, so our model is a directed preferential attachment model. I think the reason that there was not a non-rigorous version of this was because actually, even non-rigorously, this is hard to solve. In fact, I think the hardest part of our proofs were the part that even non-rigorously you would want to do those parts. I mean, the bounds for concentration and stuff were things that we could handle. The hardest part of it was actually doing what one would have wanted to do non-rigorously here. Okay, so what we have is we have some graph that we start with. You can just take it to be one vertex. And so T0 would then be B0. And at each time, I'm just going to add one edge. Okay? I could add more than one edge, but since I'm going to have some process that will link up old vertices, I'm going to get loops anyway. The main reason to send out more than one edge at a time is so that you don't just get a tree, but I'm going to have something else that's going to make the graph that we grow not a tree. Okay, and so at time t, then I have t edges since I've only sent out one edge from each new vertex that I send in. But I'm going to have n of t, and So at each time step, I'm going to put in one edge, but I'm going to have a random number of vertices. Okay, and I'm going to have 5 parameters here. After I said these guys had a lot of parameters, we're going to have 5. They actually have a lot more than 5. And I think they're pretty reasonable parameters. Okay, so what? There are basically 3 things that can happen. I'm going to have three things that I can do at each given stage. Either, and this is going to happen with probability beta, I can hook up 2 old vertices. With probability alpha, I send in a new vertex, and it sends a directed edge into an old vertex. With probability gamma, I send in a new vertex, and it sends a directed edge, and it sends an edge from an old vertex to itself. Okay? And then I need a couple of other parameters, or at least one of a couple of other parameters. Let's look at this case. The probability that I pick this old vertex from among all the old vertices will be proportional to the in-degree at time t of that vertex. Okay, if I'm trying to go from the graph at time t to the graph at time t plus 1. Now, let's say that I had started here with some graph, you know, like one vertex, okay? And this delta n were equal to 0. Everything would have in degree 0, and it would never send in any degrees. So I've got to have something like a delta in there. Okay. So the probability that and in my new vertex I send something out of an old vertex is proportional probability that I choose this guy and do that is gamma for the probability that I decided to do an out vertex times the out degree at time t of that vertex, and I could also have a delta out parameter. And these are the normalizing factors in the probabilities. And when I do a connection of 2 old guys, it's going to be proportional to the out degree of the one it's going out of and the in degree of the one it's going into. Okay. So a few remarks on this. Okay. The first remark I made already, which is I have to take either delta in greater than 0 or delta out greater than 0 or the model never grow. Okay. For the World Wide Web, if we're trying to model that, then we should take, we thought the delta out to be 0. And then anything that we get in this case would just be a content page. Okay. So when you've got your website, you might link to your papers, let's say, but those are just content pages. Okay, and we get the undirected model if we take alpha and delta in equal to 1 and everything else equal to 0, and then those as things going in, just think of those as undirected edges. And then this is going to come in for our theorem, we are going to have to exclude equals 1, alpha plus gamma equals 0. Okay, and that would just mean all I'm doing is connecting up old vertices. Okay, that's not the model that I want to look at. This next thing is a little harder to understand, but if gamma were equal to 0, then I wouldn't be sending any out edges. Okay, and If either delta in or alpha were equal to 0, then what would happen is that all the vertices that I didn't have in the set that I started with would have d in equal to 0. Okay, and so there is similarly some other things I want to rule out, some trivial cases. So when I state my theorems, it's going to be assuming that none of those trivial things happen. Okay. So, what did we prove? Okay, so we have two theorems. For the first one, what we did is we looked at the number of vertices with a certain in-degree at time t and a certain out-degree at time t. And this just comes out of solving the thing that I think was the reason that there was no non-rigorous version of this model, because it was actually hard to solve it and get these. So what the theorem says is that if I have a fixed k, then there are numbers pk and qk such that the number of vertices with in-degree k at time t grows linearly in t. With probability 1, it grows linearly in t, and the number of vertices with out-degree k grows linearly in t. This is for fixed k. But then if I let k go to infinity, how do these coefficients pk and qk act? Well, provided that alpha, beta, gamma, and delta satisfy those non-triviality conditions, they decay as a power law in k. And those x in and x out are the powers. Okay. So this is giving you the kind of behavior that you would expect. And as I said, I think the reason that Barabasi and Albert didn't do this is just it turns out you get some awful recursion relations that have to be solved, and you have to love special functions, okay, which we happen to love, but not everybody loves special functions. So, okay, and then the more complicated theorem was we looked at the number of vertices with in-degree j and out-degree k at time t, and we got some parameters that were much worse even than those. So I'm not going to write down what they are, but there's some functions of, you know, the probability of sending something in, probability of sending something out, or the probability of connecting. And so we take a fixed in-degree and out-degree, then there's some coefficient f such that the probability that I have out-degree j and in-degree j, out-degree k, scales linearly with time with probability 1. And if I hold the out-degree fixed and take the in-degree to be very large, then it falls off like a power law in the in-degree and efficient. Similarly, you know, if I hold the in-degree fixed and take the out-degree to be very large, it falls off like a power law in the out-degree. Okay, and...
In the special case of this, the result you mentioned before with gamma equals 3?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the special case where alpha and delta n are equal to 1 and everything else is equal to 0.
Now, maybe you should also mention that in particular the x tilde and x in and out are not equal to the... So there's some correlation between in and out degrees. There's a power loss.
Yes.
If you fix the in degree, are different from those if you leave the in degrees.
Yes, yeah. I mean, this has... what Christian is saying is this definitely has more content than that, okay? It's not... Okay, there is a correlation there. Okay, an application to the World Wide Web. Let me actually take the newer one off. The things that people presumably have measured in the web are just the simple x in and x out. And can we get them? Yes, we can, and we still have a range of the parameters left. Okay, so yes, you can get them. That's why we did this. So, okay. Now, a few minutes on the strategy of the proof. So the proof involved basically four steps. Obviously, the first thing that you want to do, if I'm trying to get the theorem on, like, this theorem here for the XK, then what I want to do is I want to say, given the graph at time t, what is the out degree? What is the number of vertices with in degree k at time t plus 1? Okay, and there's a way of creating them. I mean, this is just completely straightforward, right? There's a way. I mean, you don't have to understand, but obviously, there's a way to get some new ones, and there's a way to lose some. Okay. And there's some other stuff that can happen. So you just write something like that down. The first thing we want to do is take the expectation of both sides. This is the total number of vertices at time t. And so if I want to take the expectation, I've got to have some control over that. And Chernoff, a little more than Chernoff, gives me some control over that. And then I do some work, and I get this in expectation, like this result, but it's only in expectation so far. And also, the big thing is that I don't know what PK is. PK turns out to be a solution to some recursion relation I get from that. Okay. And then the next step in the proof is... Okay, still going to... Well, no, I'll take this away now. Then I want to get from the expectation result to this result here, which is a with probability 1 result. And so how do I do that? Then I need some concentration, and so I do standard concentration kind of stuff. The random variable that I'm going to look at is the of n choices, the n choice process do I do? Do I do the alpha or the beta or the gamma process? And I have a sequence of those. And there's some analysis there, and I mean, it's, you know, it's, if you know how to do these things, it's relatively straightforward. I mean, it's some work, but it's relatively straightforward. The hardest part of this, actually, is to solve the recursion relation. Okay, as I said, it becomes really, really ugly. And actually, for the FJKs, it was much, much uglier. I mean, they were just these huge, really huge expressions. And as I said, you have to love special functions.
If you like Bessel functions.
Right. If you like Bessel functions. I mean, it's kind of cool. It's kind of, you know, what people thought combinatorics was, you know, 40 years ago or something. I don't know. Anyway, and it's obviously much harder for... Because now I've got a two-dimensional array, and just to find the boundary values of these is as hard as doing the other one. So, okay, but there's, so that's the model, and that's the results. Now, just a few minutes on open problems. I'm going to finish on time. So, we've got a lot of stuff that we're doing, some of it just the four of us, meaning Bela, Oliver, Christian, and me, some of it with some students. So first, there are other properties of this model. A really obvious question is, in this model, do you get the size of the strongly connected component, the inset, the outset, and the rest to be roughly correct, or, you know, is one of them scaling with the time in some way? Okay. Also, find the diameter of the strongly connected component. Okay, and see if it has kind of scaling, which I think that it should. Another one that we're doing that I think is actually more interesting is people did not have a theoretical model of the web before. Okay? And so now we can say, let's look at the standard search engines. Let's look at PageRank, and let's look at the Kleinberg hubs, the Kleinberg hubs and authorities. And in those cases, when you do Kleinberg hubs and authorities, you're already, when you apply it, you're already looking at a set that has to do with one topic. So we can think of this whole graph as the subset, and that's what I mean by pre-process, that has to do with one topic. And then we can look for spectral properties of these, we can find the eigenvectors, and we can ask how does hubs and authorities act on this, for example, which is something that we're doing now. And then features to add to the model if we want to make it more realistic, this fitness thing. So what we have in this model is that the probability that I'm going to send something into a given vertex is going to be alpha times the n degree of that vertex. Now I could also have a fitness parameter, which is larger for some vertices and smaller for other vertices. And it's, you know, and so it would just change it in an obvious way. Okay, so it's model, but we didn't want details in our paper. But if somebody really cared about an accurate model, they could do that. I mean, I don't think there's much new interesting mathematics there. And then better clustering, so some way of adding in small, dense subgraphs. And you want to do it in a natural way. I think the copying way actually is a natural way. And another interesting way would to have different topics, okay? And, you know, this sounds, I mean, at first it sounds ugly to a graph theorist, but then when you realize that really what you're talking about is something like a list coloring, if you have different topics on your website, then it's like having different colors, and you're going to have some subset of those colors. So that would be kind of a list-colored version of some of these models. So it actually would not necessarily be ugly from a mathematical point of view. And then also, so we're also trying to come up with a reasonable model here, get some properties of it, and then maybe look at search engines on that also, which would be spectral properties on the list-colored version of this.
So the list coloring is a ferromagnetic version, right? I connect between
yes.
two lists which share a color, not which...
Right, right. Right, and I guess typically you guys do coloring problems, so you do what I would call anti-ferromagnetic models. You want your colors to be different, and here, you know, you would want your colors to be similar, so it would be ferromagnetic. List coloring. Okay.
It seems that things are wave sometimes as they start leaking.
And we could put that in pretty easily in this model. It's just we were already embarrassed having alpha, beta, gamma, and delta, especially after first looking at Allen and Collins' paper and going, oh, so many parameters. But yes, but it's a very natural thing to do, and we should have kind of like a death parameter for pages that, you know, some random way they die, and maybe their death would also have some relation to the fitness of, you know, of the pages. Okay, so that's it. Great. 10